following presentation of the Midland City Council will begin in a moment. The Midland City Council is the city's legislative body. It sets policies, approves budgets, determines tax rates, and adopts ordinances and resolutions to govern the city. It is made up of 5 elected officials that represent the wards in which they reside, and councilmen are elected to 2-year terms. The mayor is elected from among the council members by vote of the city council. City council meetings are held at 7 p.m. 2 Mondays per month in council chambers at City Hall. This presentation is provided by the MCTV Network, a service of the City of Midland. Replays of this meeting can be found on MGTV Channel 188 on Charter Spectrum, through Channel 99 on AT&T U-verse, or on demand at www.cityofmidlandmi.gov. Select meetings are available on MCTV Network's Government Affairs podcast channel.
Good evening and welcome to our May 20th, 2024 meeting of City Council. Please stand and join us for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Lacey, will you please call roll?
Honorable Mayor Donker.
Here.
Councilman Brown Wilhelm. Councilman Soler.
Here.
Councilman Wozbinski.
Here.
Councilman Arnosky.
Here.
Okay, thank you. Does anyone on council have a conflict of interest with anything that's on this evening's agenda?
No.
No, Madam Mayor.
I see none. Then we'll move on. That takes us to the consent agenda. All resolutions marked with an asterisk are considered to be routine and will be enacted by one motion. There'll be no separate consideration of these items unless a council member or citizen so requests during the discussion stage of the motion to adopt the consent agenda as indicated. If there is even a single request, the item will be removed from the consent agenda without further motion and considered in its listed sequence in regular fashion. Is there anyone from council who would like an item removed from the consent agenda? Anyone from the public want an item removed from the consent agenda? All right, seeing none, then ready, any questions? All right, all in favor, then please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
I'll move.
Get a motion.
Oh.
I'll move.
Okay. Okay, can we have a motion? Steve moved.
Mark.
Are you second? Okay, now. Any comments? All right, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
We're off to a rolling start.
Ooh. All right, that passed 5-0. That takes us now down to item number 2, and this evening we have a proclamation, and Selena's here to tell us about that.
Good evening. Each June, communities across America come together to celebrate LGBTQ plus Pride Month. Locally, our Pride Month activities and resources are coordinated through the Great Lakes Bay Pride Group. Here with us tonight is Executive Director Scott Ellis, who will accept tonight's proclamation designating June 2024 as LGBTQ plus month in the City of Midland.
Great. Lacey, will you please read the resolution?
This resolution authorizes the mayor to issue a proclamation designating June 2024 as LGBTQ plus Pride Month in the City of Midland and urging residents to celebrate with our members of the LGBTQ plus community.
All right, can we have a motion to accept the resolution?
So move.
We have a second? First and second. Any discussion? All right, all in favor then, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? All right, that passes 5-0. And Lacey, will you please read the proclamation?
Whereas the movement toward equal rights for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender LGBTQ plus people, a historic turning point occurred on June 28, 1969 in New York City with the onset of the Stonewall Riots. During these riots, LGBTQ plus citizens rose and fought against the discriminatory criminal laws that have since been declared unconstitutional. And whereas LGBTQ plus pride celebrations have taken place around the country every June to commemorate the beginning of the Stonewall Riots, and whereas June is celebrated as LGBTQ plus Pride Month nationwide, and whereas Great Lakes Bay Pride, a regional nonprofit, works to connect the LGBTQ plus and ally community to resources, education, offering networking opportunities and advocates for LGBTQ plus rights in the Great Lakes Bay region and beyond. And whereas our nation was founded on the principle of equal rights for all people, but the fulfillment of this promise has been long in coming for many Americans. And whereas recognizing the contributions made by members of the LGBTQ plus community who actively promote the principles of equality, liberty, and justice, now, whereas the City of Midland supports the rights of every citizen to experience equality and the freedom from discrimination, now, therefore, we, the Mayor and City Council of the City of Midland, Michigan, do hereby proclaim June 2024 as LGBTQ plus Pride Month in the City of Midland and urge residents to celebrate with our members of the LGBTQ plus community.
Thank you so much for being here tonight, Scott. And you know, we do have a community-wide vision statement about being a place where everyone thrives, and that is important to the residents of Midland, and we appreciate the work that you do. So will you just please take a minute and tell us a little bit about what's going to happen during that time?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Well, first, let me say thank you to Mayor Donker, the City Council, and all the city staff that helped pull this together. Again, we are accepting Pride Month proclamations from all four of the city centers in the Great Lakes Bay region that we serve. Bay City, Midland, Saginaw, and Mount Pleasant. And we're excited this year to be hosting five events across four counties in the month of June. We kick off in Mount Pleasant on June 1. We have a Pride Night at the Loons here in Midland on June 7th, an event in Bay City on the 16th, our regional festival the 22nd, and a big party in Saginaw on the 29th. So you can learn all about that at GreatLakesBayPride.org, and we hope you'll join us. Thank you.
All right, very good.
Thanks.
Thank you again. All right, that takes us now down to public comment, and this is an opportunity for people to address council on issues that are relevant to council business but not on the agenda tonight. So is there any public comment? All right, so you need to come up to the podium, state your name and address, and then address council, please.
Okay, my name is Dr. Stephanie Biasi. My address is 27 Burrell Court, Midland, Michigan. And I wanted to talk to council about my experience on the rail trail this weekend. I was biking with my husband and enjoying the beautiful day, and was passed by a vehicle of some sort. It was not a standard bike. I don't know how to qualify it. I don't know what brand it was. I don't know what type it was, but going very, very fast. And I had this sense of not being feeling safe, that I thought if I would have swerved, I could have gotten knocked over. So I wanted that to be of consideration. I'm concerned with some of the signage on the rail trail as to what is allowed and not allowed, that kind of thing. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Excuse me, one quick question. Did you happen to notice whether the, let's call it a bicycle, the person was pedaling or not?
The person was not pedaling.
Okay, thank you.
Something to that. I was with her.
I'm
Dr. Ziggy Kazicki, and I'm married to Stephanie. There was a 10-year-old boy on it who was driving over 20 miles an hour and zipped by us. And, you know, I don't know if there's an age limit on motorized bikes or if there's any kind of training that people have to take, but this boy was, you know, just 10 and really didn't understand what could happen if somebody veered in front of him. In fact, he passed us without saying anything, and then later I saw him speeding along the edge of the, as fast as he could, like a bombardier pilot with his head down and just taking straight off. And behind him, about 40 or 50 yards, was his mother on a pedal bike. And so I'm not sure what the rules are, what the expectations are, but first of all, you know, a 10-year-old riding a motorized bike at that speed on a crowded rail trail is going to be a disaster somewhere. So, and we talked about this earlier, and I know that you're going to give this some consideration. There may not be a good solution, but maybe people need to understand that only pedal bikes are allowed on there, or maybe there needs to be some etiquette, some rules. I'm not sure what, but you know, I'm afraid somebody's going to get hurt, and we're both concerned because we're on it a lot. And it is a wonderful rail trail. I mean, we should be really happy that we have something like that in this community, and it gets a lot of use, and we use it a lot. And you know, we just hope that people continue to benefit from it. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Is there any other public comment this evening? Okay, seeing none, we'll move on to item number 3, and As Mr. I can never say it right, Kaczynski said that staff is going to be having a conversation about that. You want to comment on that?
Sure. So for the council does not know about this, obviously, so it's not necessarily council per se that'll be responding immediately, but we do have a staff meeting tomorrow morning. This was brought to our attention earlier today, so we'll be having a discussion tomorrow to find out, number one, what we can do, and also to have a discussion on what other reports, concerns we might have relative to the operations on the rail trail. And then, of course, what the next steps might be moving forward. So whether that ultimately makes its way back to city council or not will depend on the outcome of the discussion. But we will follow up on it starting tomorrow.
Yeah, because I thought I asked the question because the council did approve certain types of e-bikes on the rail trail. And right. They're usually required pedal assist in order to have an e-bike. If you're just be able to basically go without pedaling, that's a motorcycle and it's not allowed.
You're absolutely right. The class one bikes are what U.S. Council approved a number of years back, and they are a pedal assist bike, not a you don't have to not pedal, basically. Right. So if they weren't pedaling going that fast, it probably was a class not permitted on the trail.
Yeah. I take it you'll have some conversation with the county also on that, because we only know we got a certain portion of the
trip. Ours is a portion of it. We will start at our staff level with everyone from our Parks and Rec staff to city police and others who may have had reason to take reports or hear about different incidents along the way. And then depending on the outcome, determine whether or not we need to expand that to the county as well. Because as you've correctly indicated, there are large sections of that trail, partially within but a little bit beyond the city limits that the county is responsible for. Thank you.
Okay, was there any other public comment? All right, seeing none then, we'll move on to item number three, which is the first reading of an ordinance regarding the landfill disposal fees, and Karen Murphy is here to tell us about that.
Thank you, Mayor Donker. So as you recall, we started a process a couple of years ago to gradually increase the landfill fees. They had not been increased since 1993. The landfill is an enterprise fund. That means that the rates provide the revenue for the service. So the rates could be rates that people pay at the gate as they come to the landfill. They could be the fees that the city pays to dispose of our curbside items that are collected. But all of the revenue that's generated is what funds that operation. As you may recall, too, we did a landfill study, and one of the products of that study was a financial modeling tool that we can update every year to help us set our rates. First person of the night, it wasn't turned on. So that financial tool considers all of the expenses at the landfill, including operating, long-term maintenance expenses, perpetual care funds, planned capital expenditures, working fund balance. It takes all of those into consideration, and it tells us essentially what we need our revenue to be, and then we can adjust the revenue across the different types of waste categories. So the waste categories are, for example, demolition debris, compacted refuse, street sweeper dirt. Those are the types of categories we have. So the category rate is determined based on how quickly something decomposes, how well the material compacts, if it's really squishy, or whether we can, you know, squish it down and not take as much airspace. If there's any potential for future contamination, that makes the rates go up a little bit. If there's any special testing that the state requires. And then, of course, we do a comparison to industry standard as well. So we had a three-year plan in place for incremental increases because we hadn't increased since 1993. We are going into the third year of that incremental rate increase. And then once we do our rates this year, then every year we'll look at them and do just minor tweaks here and there as needed. All of our disposal fees are in cubic yards. So here you'll see the current rate versus the proposed rate. And again, some of these rates are going up more significantly than others, and that was part of our three-year plan to phase things in to get those waste categories closer to what an industry standard would be. So for asbestos, we're requesting a $2 per cubic yard increase. For yard waste, 75 cents per yard. For bulk medical waste, $1 more per yard. Demolition, $1 more per yard. Compacted waste, 50 cents more. Compacted waste would be all of the townships that collect curbside and bring their materials to the landfill where it's compacted into a commercial truck. Contaminated soils, we're asking for a $3 per yard increase. Foundry sand, $2.50 increase. Grits and rags, industrial waste, again,
$2.50 increase there. We're trying to come up with some standardized rates for those materials because they take the same amount of effort to accept and to monitor. Main break soils, this is a rather large jump. This is from $13 to $20. These are for materials that are generated by the city when we have water main break or a sanitary sewer issue. And we have worked with the department heads in those departments. We asked, do you want us to stretch us out a little bit more, or is this something we can accommodate in a year? And they said it's something that we could accommodate within a year.
Can we just stop right there for mm-hmm. a second, see where we're on that? Why is that such a large jump? I mean, is it because they're contaminated, or?
They could be contaminated. They're usually pretty sloppy, so you have to put them in a certain area. They may take a little bit of extra handling. And we're trying to get them in line more with an industry standard as well. Our rates are still lower than industry standard. We're probably, I asked the landfill superintendent, anywhere from 60 to 80% of what industry standard is. We equate our rates on cubic yards. The industry standard is tons, so it's a little bit hard to compare. It's not really an apples to apples comparison. But with us being municipality as well, we're not looking to make a profit. We're just looking to cover our expenses. So we're not quite as high as what the industry would be. Most landfills in the state are private, so they are looking at a profit. Then a couple more sanitary sewer debris, stormwater catch basin debris. Again, we're trying to bump all those up to that $20 per cubic yard. Street dirt, we'll go from $13 to $20 per yard. That's what we collect from the street sweeper. That absolutely could be contaminated. There's all kinds of oils and whatnot on the streets that get swept up. And then the wastewater and water plant sludge, again, bringing it up to that $20 per cubic yard. There's also some new language proposed in the ordinance. One piece of language is that services may be refused at the discretion of landfill staff for safety concerns. These services include things like if somebody comes to the landfill and they don't have a battery on their dump trailer and they ask us if we can hook our battery up so they can dump their materials in the landfill. If the staff feels that maybe the trailer that they would hook the battery up to isn't safe, then they can deny that service. Right now, we don't have a clause that allows us to deny service. Or if they want us to hook a chain onto the load of their material and pull it out of their trailer for them, if we feel like it's loaded unsafely, then we have the right to refuse that. So that's just some language to clarify that. And then we also have added language to remind people that the landfill is an active construction site, and refusal to adhere to safety protocols or follow instructions by staff could result in banishment from the site. We don't have anywhere in the city ordinance that deals with the landfill except for the fees section. And so we wanted to get this language in there because we do have problems with people driving too fast or going areas where they're not supposed to go. And so we wanted a little bit more oomph behind our warnings that we give people. So we'd like to add this to the ordinance. There's no change in the ordinance to the residential self-haul fee. So residents will still get 3 cubic yards free per month per address in Midland County. And then $12 for each additional cubic yard. And then year three, as you recall, the general fund pays the rates, and the way we've been paying rates in the general fund for all of the refuse that we collect and heavy item and yard waste is we've been paying a flat rate for years, and that flat rate was around $300,000 when we started this process, and it should have been $1.2 million a year. So the general fund was not putting in enough money for the services they were receiving. And so this will be the third year of a $250,000 increase to the general fund. And we'll continue to request that from City Council until we get to that rate where we feel we're actually paying our fair share from the general fund into the landfill based on the fees and then the volumes that we contribute to the landfill. So this is the first reading of the ordinance. The second reading will be on June 10th. And then the new fees would go into effect on July 1st. Any questions?
So the study was done 3 years ago, and we said, okay, we're going to divide it over the past 3 years and everything. Has there been any legislation? You keep hearing tipping fees and stuff like that over the past 3 years that we probably need to account for?
No, not yet. We are carefully monitoring the tipping fee discussion that you're alluding to. To date, we don't feel that that's going to go into effect within the next year. One thing that's a little more concerning to us is the new materials management plan language that's coming out. We have a solid waste management plan, and the state has changed one of their solid waste regulations to require us to write something that's called a materials management plan. So instead of just dealing with solid waste in a landfill, they want us to come up with a plan on how to divert things from the landfill, so more emphasis on recycling. That could have some pretty strong implications on the landfill because it will eliminate the closed county language that's in the our solid waste management plan right now. So we'll no longer be operating in a bubble where all of the refuse in Midland County has to go to the Midland County landfill. So we're working very closely on what that's going to look like, and that could impact our fees. If our volumes were to go up, you know, then we wouldn't have to raise fees, but if our volumes were to go down, then we may have to look at some higher fees. But that will be a couple years out before we know what the ramifications on that are.
So, Karen, the other thing you might want to mention, as well as the likely leachate treatment requirements that are coming, and which could significantly increase costs in landfill operations.
Yes, there is some language that we may, the landfill, this, for lack of a better term, there's liquid that comes out of decomposing refuse. I like to call it garbage juice, but the landfill people call it leachate. So the leachate can have any number of contaminants in it, and the state is looking at guidelines to require us to, right now we put that leachate into the sanitary sewer system. It goes to the wastewater treatment plant. They filter out whatever they need to filter out to get to their levels. The new legislation, when it goes into place, may require us to pre-treat it before we send it into the sanitary sewer. And if that happens and we have to build a pre-treatment plant, basically a miniature wastewater plant at the landfill, that could be a $7 million capital investment plus the cost to run it. So we're still very much with bated breath watching that language and that legislation to see if that will happen to us or not.
Karen, you made a comment about what I might call protocols about, we're not going to unload it if we don't think it's safe. And you're putting it here in the fee schedule because you don't have another place to put it. Well, frankly, I'm not sure that that's the best idea, because if I'm looking for the fees, I'm going to look in the fee section. But if I'm looking for the protocols, I'm not going to look in the fee section. How do I, if there are some rules, landfill rules, should we have a landfill rules section so people can easily say it's there? Because if they're doing something, we're going to say, well, you need to look at the fees. Because that's going to tell you what we don't do. And I'd say, well, I looked at the fees to find out what the fees were before I came here, but I didn't know I had to read rules too. Do you understand? I don't know if you understand what I'm saying.
I do understand that the specific language is right where we list in the ordinance, where we actually list the service fees. So a pullout service, a battery service, and then it says right after that is an asterisk that these services may be denied if it's deemed unsafe. Okay. We could look at another section in the ordinance. I guess that would be a discussion for Brad and I to have.
Well, the other option that will be used, of course, is the website and online information. Mm-hmm. Even though the rules may be within the fee ordinance, most people are going, if they are looking for them, they're going to go to the city's website, look at the landfill operations, the data that's provided on there, and then determine if they comply, number one, if there's a charge, number two. And in that case, that type of a rule would then pop up. So that's the more likely location, quite frankly, than they would find it than going to an ordinance at all.
I'm going to go look at that later on. Because to be honest, I have not gone and looked at the landfill fees section. And so I think I will now, just to see what it looks like. Because I think if we're going to tell someone they can't do something, it has to be clear, and we're going to fall back on that as the response to them, oh, it's right there, then I think we need to have it so it's easily seen by them. So
sure.
I'll look at that. Thanks.
And Karen, if we looked at recycling the water main break soils, because as I understand it, we're pulling that clearing that away, but then we're bringing new soil in to fill the hole. So it's like a net zero in terms of the soil going in, soil going out. And I'd be surprised if it's too contaminated. I mean, it's just coming out of the ground and there's just water, drinking water.
Yeah, it just depends on how saturated the soils are and where we can put them in the landfill. Sometimes we do reuse, if it's good soil, we may not charge for that load and we may stockpile it. We may use it for purposes, but sometimes it's really, really sloppy and wet and messy and there may be debris in it, and that type of material isn't useful for us to recycle, so we would put it in the fill and charge.
Okay, so you do consider it at least?
Sure.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Thanks.
Yep, we beg, borrow, and steal whenever we can. If it's a good material and we can repurpose it, we do.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
All right, any other questions? Ms. Murphy? Perfect, okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, any comments from the public as it relates to this ordinance? Okay, seeing none, Lacey, will you please read the resolution?
This action gives first reading to an ordinance to amend fees for landfill disposal services.
All right, can we have a motion to accept? accept the resolution?
So move.
Second.
Any discussion? All right, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, that passes 5-0. Okay, that takes us down to item number 4. Woohoo, we've been waiting for tonight. This is the adoption of our city budget, and Laura Stoll is here to tell us about that.
Thank you. I've been waiting for this too. So tonight is the night that we will look at adopting the budget that we have been talking to for several meetings, or talking about. Again, there's always the availability to comment on the budget. So we have goals for our budget when we're budgeting, and also directives from the council. The first directive was to not reduce the level of service, which we have not in this budget. We've maintained the millage rate at 15.14. And so what this is just kind of looking back and seeing the history. This is now going to be the 7th consecutive year as keeping the millage rate at 15.14. The budget complies with the Headley rollback rules, truth in assessing, truth in taxation, and the Uniform Budgeting Act. So the millage rate at 15.14, the average home value that the assessor has given us is $226,700, so an average of $143 per month towards taxes. This proposed budget includes additional funding to our unfunded liabilities, the MERS plan at $500,000, and the police and fire plan at $100,000. So this comes from what we have determined that we will owe on these pensions, and then to add the extra that the council has directed. The next directive was to add an additional money to Barstow Airport of $250,000, and also to create a building fund for future renovations or new buildings, whatever we see fit. But we are creating that fund. And then, as Karen talked about, we are looking at a possible extra expense at the landfill, so we have talked about putting an extra $500,000 to the landfill for those future costs or anticipated cost. Citywide expenditures, the obvious big area where we spend our money is the general fund, which is at 30%, and then other governmental funds is at 21%. Water and water reclamation follow that at 16 and 13. So just to look at the difference between this budget and last budget, it is 167.2 citywide again, and last year it was 146.9. The big increases in this is Concept 5 expenses, and we had a decrease in the landfill, but that was because we had budgeted last year for Cell 17 development. So that is not obviously being budgeted in this year. So there was a reduction of $2 million there. The citywide revenues, the greatest actually comes from fees for services, and that because this includes water and sewer, those are the bulk of those fees for services. And then is followed by property taxes. So moving to the general fund, our largest source of revenue is property tax, and then next intergovernmental, which is our federal and state money that comes to us in forms of state shared revenue, federal grants, things like that. Just to look at our taxable value, because the taxes is our biggest source of revenue, the taxable value overall increased by 6.22%. That's why when we leave the millage rate the same, we still have an increase in taxes. Just a few highlights on the general fund revenue. Property taxes, we did gain because of that taxable value $1 million in increased taxes. The next large reduction that I wanted to point out is in other, and that definitely is from contributions. We do not normally upfront, because we don't know what contributions we'll receive. Those come to council during the year and are amended at that time. Looking at our expenditures in the general fund, the largest portion that we spend is personnel services. That is all employee wages and fringe benefits. And then we move to functions. Public safety is the large part of the type of expenditure that we have in the general fund. So to look at our expenditures, we have several reductions. Big change in the general government, which is the administrative type expenses in the general fund. We had several large retirements from key personnel that we had to pay out those expenses at retirement. We also have across the board here personnel costs that have increased. Public safety, our increases there, the reduction there is planning is part of the public safety, and we had big flood expenditures in that fund, and that's why it was budgeted in 2024 and is not in the budget for 2025. Next one, looking at Parks and Rec, that is the $2.5 million that was budgeted for the pool. And so that may end up as a carryover, but right now it is not in the 25 budget. And capital projects is the other large reduction, and that is we received recognized $1.7 million for the riverfront project. And so that is why that has a big reduction, because that was in 2024. Transfers out, we have the increase in transfers to the library and Dial-A-Ride, which are just our normal contributions to help fund the needs of those two funds. We also created the building fund, the additional landfill, and that is what makes up that additional $1 million in the transfers. This is the third year of the increases that were approved in 2022 for the water rates. And so this resolution will adopt the budgets for all the city funds. It authorizes a total millage rate of 15.1385. That's 12.2638 for general operations, 0.438 for stormwater, 1 mil for library, and 1.465 for public safety pensions. It also authorizes the continuation of additional 2 mils to the DDA. It authorizes a 1% administration fee on the tax collections, and also allows for a 4% late payment fee on taxes paid after the legal due dates. For the delinquent taxes, those are, if they're unpaid by March, they do get turned over to Bay and Midland counties, and they become a lien on the property. This resolution does comply with GASB 54, designating the fund balance for fiscal year ending June 2024. 6.14674 is committed fund balance for future expenditures, and $13 million, that is the same committed fund balance for the budget stabilization. And then it will also create an assigned fund balance for encumbrances. for those encumbrances, it authorizes the Director of Fiscal Services, myself, to encumber funds into the 24-25 budget if there are sufficient funds remaining in 23-24. And each item has previous City Council budgetary approval. It also authorizes myself to encumber funds into the 23-24 or 24-25. Again, I changed that on the wrong version of this. And it is with the intent to spend the funds for the purpose in which they were originally approved, and the periodic costs which are budgeted each year are deemed to be non-reoccurring or necessary, offset to unexpected adverse conditions in the upcoming year. It also directs me to provide an explanation to council through quarterly financial report. I want to thank the council for providing direction to myself and to the department heads for this budget. And I would like to thank the finance staff and all of the departments, really, because they all have a lot of input and work they put into the budget. And so I will take questions and hopefully have a resolution to adopt the budget.
All right. Does anyone in council have any questions for Ms. Stillwell? Okay. All right. No questions here. Thank you.
Thank you.
So any comments from the public? All right, seeing no comments, Lacey, will you please read the resolution?
This resolution adopts the annual budgets of the various city funds for the fiscal year beginning July 1, 2024 and ending June 30, 2025. Authorizes the city assessor to levy 12.2638 mills of property taxes for general operations, 0.4382 mills for stormwater operations, 1.0 mill for library operations, and 1.4365 mills for public safety pension, for a total of 15.1385 mills. Authorizes the levy of an additional 2 mills of property taxes on property in the 2006 amended downtown development district. Authorizes the imposition of a tax administration fee of 1% on all applicable taxes levied on both the winter and summer tax billings. Authorizes imposition of an additional 4% fee for taxes paid after the tax payment due dates. Designates that the general fund's fund balance for the fiscal year ending June 30, 2024 shall include $6,149,647 as committed fund balance for future year expenditures, $13,556,260 as a committed fund balance for budget stabilization, and an amount to be determined as assigned fund balance for encumbrances. Authorizes the Director of Fiscal Services to encumber into the 2024-25 budgets of the various city funds items that comply with designated criteria identified in the resolution, and finally directs the Director of Fiscal Services to provide an explanation of amounts encumbered to City Council in a quarterly financial report during the 2024-25 fiscal year.
All right. Can we have a motion to accept the resolution?
So moved.
Second.
First and second. Okay. Any discussion?
I just want to say great job. And I know it was a lot of hard work, and just appreciate the department and department heads, all the work you've done to get us to where we are, to keep taxes where they are, and keep up the great work.
Yeah, let me just add, Laura, I mean, we ask you questions, but we realize that you're just here representing all the different departments. You're also coming here without the decades of services that your predecessor had. And so the knowledge base is not quite to that same level, but I'm sure it'll continue to grow. So please understand that we understand that you're in some ways just the messenger, and we do appreciate the middleman role that you play here. But thank you.
Any other questions or comments? All right, then, ready to vote? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, that passes 5-0. We have a budget.
Yay.
Okay.
And on time.
Yeah. Yay. All right, that now takes us down to item number 5, which has to do with Business Route US 10's reconstruction project, and Mr. Kane is here to tell us about that.
Thank you, Mayor Donker.
So tonight, I'm here to provide an update on the latest budget numbers for the Business Route US 10 project. This is a Michigan Department of Transportation project that the City of Midland has been collaborating with MDOT on since 2015. So we're closing in on the ninth year. It'll be about 11 years till we get to construction. So these things do take time. As a reminder, this is a pretty major project for the community. This is the entirety of the M20 Business Route 10 corridors. So Patrick and Lyon Roads beginning at Washington, running to the west through downtown along Indian and Buttles, and then south and west along Jerome Street to just north of Main Street. So just sort of outside of where we're standing tonight. So a pretty major corridor, big community impact here with this project. At the outset, MDOT worked with the City of Midland to establish some project goals for this project, and those are outlined on this page. I point back to these just to highlight that some of the elements that you'll be considering tonight for inclusion in this project tie back to these project goals and some of the things that have been discussed with the community over the last 9 years. And so among those, increasing and encouraging economic development along the corridor, improving connectivity and mobility, and ultimately arriving at a corridor design that reflects current roadway design practices and standards. So just a snippet of the project timeline. This has been going on, as I said, we've been working on this since 2015. In July of 2022, MDOT released conceptual plans and cost estimates for this project. They also held a open house here at City Hall at that time to review the project with the public. Since that time, they've been working on what they would describe as preliminary plans and cost estimates. We've tried to put this into some more descriptive terminology than preliminary. Preliminary and concept, to me, sound like almost the same thing. But talking with MDOT, these are essentially about 90% complete construction drawings. So they're basically putting the final touches on these. Preliminary plans will bring them into full construction plans where they can be let, so they can be put out to bid to the public. So we're nearing the end of this construction engineering phase with the release of the cost estimates. At the end of the fiscal year, next fiscal year, July 1, local funds do need to be committed for this project. And so we'll go through what that looks like in a moment. And then at this time, MDOT anticipates beginning construction on the project in the spring of 2026. They're also looking at the phasing of the project right now as part of this preliminary plan process. And that's one of many elements they'll be discussing with the community later this week in another open house event. So there are five additional elements that were included in the construction design drawings and the preliminary estimates that MDOT released last month. Those include a non-motorized pathway. This is a 10-foot pathway that's proposed for construction along the south side of Buttle Street, roughly from State Street, where the Grand Curve Parkway path currently ends, to here at City Hall at Jerome Street. And with that, the undergrounding of existing utilities that are currently overhead along that same corridor. These are two elements of the project that are sort of tie-barred together. That pathway is not possible without the undergrounding of the utilities. The undergrounding of the utilities, however, is possible without constructing the pathway.
Jacob, could I ask a clarification on that?
When
you
say
the south side of Buttles, are we talking about something that is within the current paved portion of the street, or is it on what would be the upside of the curb?
It would be on the upside of the curb. So this is essentially a widening of the sidewalk, taking advantage of the removal of those utilities, because as those preliminary plans are shared with the community later this week, you'll see that at points along the Buttle Street corridor, there is a three-lane cross-section at the major intersections. And so there are right-hand turn lanes provided. That pathway still fits within the right-of-way at those locations with limited exceptions. I think there is a small amount of right-of-way acquisition taking place to facilitate this project, but in large part, that pathway would be within the existing right-of-way, but behind the curb.
Okay, so basically a widening of the sidewalks, kind of like what we saw on Saginaw Road.
Yes, sir. Yep, very similar. Slightly wider here at 10-foot as a cross-section than what's on Saginaw Road, which I believe is an 8-foot cross-section, but otherwise similar.
Okay, thanks.
The last three elements would be decorative street lighting, and so this would be lighting consistent with that provided on the reconstructed M20 bridge. and that would be on one side of each street within the project limits as currently scoped and budgeted in the numbers this evening. Decorative traffic signal mast arms, and so rather than doing an MDOT standard span wire traffic signal installation, this would be a mast arm that you typically see at intersections throughout the city of Midland. There are 13 signalized intersections within the project limits. So basically starting at the intersections of Indian and Buttles with Jerome Street and moving towards the east to the intersections of Patrick and Lyon with Washington. So 13 of those intersections receiving decorative traffic signal mast arms. And then water main replacement. This is primarily limited to areas along Buttles Street. Indian Street at this time is currently proposed for a not a full reconstruction, but just a surface treatment from the curve to Jerome Street. So the water main replacements are primarily at Buttles and then at select crossing locations throughout the remainder of the project area. Looking at base costs, so the city of Midland does have to provide by statute a contribution to this project. That contribution is currently estimated at just short of $1 million. And so this would be our contribution to the base project, which is essentially the reconstruction elements of the road only, not those additional elements, the five items that I just outlined. So the city of Midland could expect, regardless of our participation on additional elements, approximately $1 million in contribution to this project under Act 51. The total project cost for the corridor, again, accepting out those additional elements, is currently budgeted at just short of $30 million for that project.
Let me ask a lighting question. So this cost here reflects some standard elements. You know, for example, MDOT would put some light poles in on this corridor.
They would not. So they generally.
Oh, so this is not, and so there's zero cost in that number associated with lighting.
Other than coordination with Consumers Energy and any existing rental light poles that might be present along the corridor, this would not include any additional lighting or any decorative lighting on any of the corridor.
Additional or decorative, but it does include what's currently there?
So we have existing decorative lighting that's not included in this cost. So there would be additional cost to remove and replace that lighting in place with the project. That's going to be a slightly difficult to pin down number because I'll get into this a bit later in the presentation, but there's an opportunity to leave some of that lighting in place potentially during construction, but some of it would be disrupted. Depends on the limits of the construction, what they need to access, how much of that lighting is disrupted, and how much cost is incurred with its replacement. But generally speaking, MDOT's base is no lighting. So lighting is an optional element to the local community when it's included, and it generally would be at full cost to the city of Midland.
But they don't. Okay. I thought they gave us like an allotment for the ugly poles, and we put in the decorative poles and have to pay the difference between the ugly and the decorative.
No, that is true for the traffic signal portion of the project. They do provide for a base on the traffic signals, and we would be paying an incremental fee above that to provide the decorative mast arm treatment. But for the street lighting, no, that's fully local responsibility. So diving into the additional element costs, so again, these are items that would be funded 100% by the city of Midland through a variety of different funding sources if they are ultimately included in the final project. And again, with some exceptions, so the non-motorized path is an example. MDOT would replace sidewalk in the location of that proposed path. The city of Midland would be responsible for the incremental additional cost of providing a 10-foot non-motorized path along that corridor, not the full cost of that non-motorized path. And so you'd be looking at an incremental additional cost of approximately $250,000 to upgrade from a standard sidewalk to that 10-foot non-motorized path. With that, again, required to be associated with that if the non-motorized path is included, is the undergrounding of utilities along the corridor. That's currently priced at just over $2 million, so a total of about $2.3 million for the pathway with the undergrounding of utilities along the Jerome to State Street portions of Buttles Street. That is part of the project that is fully located within the boundaries of the Downtown Development Authority District, and it is anticipated, we'll talk again a little bit more later about this, but that the DDA would be providing the funding for those elements if they're included. Decorative street lighting, so again, we've got a breakout here. Decorative street lighting as an element has been priced for the portions that are within and outside of the DDA limits. The DDA limits of this project generally break at State Street, so those portions of the project east of State Street are outside the DDA boundary. Those portions of the project west of State Street are generally within the DDA boundary. And so decorative street lighting costs are about $3.8 million for the non-DDA portions of this corridor, and would be about $2.3 million for the DDA portion for a total cost of $6 million. Decorative traffic signal mast arms, again, split DDA, non-DDA. The bulk of those signalized intersections do fall within the DDA district boundary, and so those costs are a little bit higher. Correspondingly, overall total cost would be $421,000 as currently estimated. And then water main replacement out of the water fund at a little over $3 million of work for, again, largely the replacement of water mains along Buttle Street and that corridor, and then some select crossings.
Can we talk about that just a minute?
Sure.
I mean, so we're ripping up the street. Am I correct?
I mean, correct.
So this is now the time to put in fix the water mains and put new water mains in if we're going
to
do it.
If there was anything underground we wanted to do, this would be the best time to do it, unless we can wait another 25 to 30 plus years.
Oh, okay.
Or unless we want to disrupt the community through another street closure.
Yeah. But, that was my question also. We have looked out like 20 years in the future to see if there's anything with that. Also.
Yeah, and like anything, I'm sure something will pop up at some point in the next 25 to 30 years, but this represents, in terms of water main work, what we believe is needed to carry us through to that next reconstruction.
How about for sanitary?
There weren't any sanitary items identified through this part of the project. So
okay.
When we get down to this part of town, we've got some pretty large mains, and I think generally speaking, we have fewer maintenance issues, as I understand it, on both the storm and the sanitary side. We've got some really enormous stormwater facility, as you might imagine. We're near the river, so we're getting a lot of upstream flows in both systems, but none of that's proposed to be included in this project.
So just again, to clarify, the water main would be from Jerome all the way to Washington?
It would be from Jerome to State, approximately. Just it'd be to the point where Buttles begins to turn into
State.
Lyon, so just to the east of State.
Yeah.
You have a map. You don't, probably don't.
We've got
not of the water main work, but I do have the overall
map. I mean, like that. Okay.
Yeah.
So, but if they're redoing, okay, they're not redoing. What are they doing? What is MDOT doing on Patrick and Lyon as far as the road surface?
Full reconstruction. So the entirety of this corridor is a full reconstruction, with the exception of the portions of Indian from basically State Street to Jerome.
Okay. So wouldn't the logic about replacing any water mains apply for the entire section then on, you know, Buttles going all the way to, again, to Washington?
If they needed replacement, yeah. My understanding from the water department is these are the water mains that are in need of replacement based on the anticipated lifespan of the new roadway. Indian Street, I think, probably would have been included if it was a full reconstruct,
right,
but it's a surface treatment.
But I would think anything that's doing a reconstruction, we should consider the water mains.
We'll have to look.
Same logic.
Yep.
So, but the price tag right now that's quoted is just for Buttles between Jerome and, let's call it, State.
Yeah.
Yep, just for that portion, yeah, of the project. So with all those additional elements totaled together, we have an approximate, this would be the 100% cost of the city, in addition to our $1 million Act 51 estimate of $12,127,697. So again, adding those together brings the city, if all of the additional elements were included, at an all-in cost of just over $13 million. The Downtown Development Authority has been heavily involved in this project from the beginning. In March of 2023, they passed a resolution supporting the inclusion of the additional amendments within their DDA district boundary in this project. And at their recent meeting on May 8th, they reaffirmed that support based on these preliminary project cost estimates, and requested that staff develop funding scenarios such as the use of bonds or other funding sources in order to facilitate the inclusion of those elements within the DDA district.
Okay, can you just speak to that? Because people will look at that big number and they'll say, but that money, that's DDA money, is DDA money spent in their area, not to be spent in any other place other than that area. Am I correct? Close.
So the DDA is a tax capture district. Yes. So the funds that they collect through the incremental growth of the district's tax base are to be reinvested in that district. And they can be invested in a number of different ways, including on projects like this on infrastructure or amenities within the district.
Well, that's the businesses choosing to invest in the businesses area.
It'd be any property owner, yeah. and particularly those that have contributed through investment that has raised the tax base. But it's also the city at large, because right. the city at large is investing in that district by allowing that increment to stay in the district. So everyone in the city has a stake in the DDA through that tax increment financing. The DDA, the Downtown Development Authority Board, serves to help direct how those funds are spent for the betterment of the downtown district.
They don't have $5 million in their bank account right now to pay for this.
That's not my understanding, but I'm not the Downtown Development Authority budget okay. expert
well,
either.
That is an open question.
Absolutely.
Okay. I think I understood the water main answer, so thank you for that. The let's call it the sidewalk. The logic between 8-foot, I mean, a wider sidewalk understood, but because you're going to push bikes and other things there. But 8-foot, which is what we have on Saginaw Road, versus 10-foot. You know, I think the cost can add up quite a bit in terms of that extra. Do we need, you know, what has the analysis been done? What analysis has been done to justify an extra need for 2 more feet? I mean, 8-foot's pretty generous if you look at Saginaw Road.
So a couple things I'll note there. So one, the bulk of the cost here is with the underground of the utilities, which is really essential, even if at an 8-foot width.
I'm just looking at the breakdown. You know, this is the... Granted, it's not in the scheme of these other million-dollar
right.
items. It's only $243,000, but let's make sure we're spending the money wisely.
Sure. Generally speaking, for a non-motorized path that's usable by all road users, 10-foot's generally considered the minimum. So when we would construct like a rail trail type pathway, the sidewalks along Saginaw Road are wider sidewalks, but they don't really meet the definition of a non-motorized pathway at an 8-foot width. 10-foot provides kind of building off of tonight's earlier public comment. 10-foot provides sufficient room that a bicyclist and pedestrians can coexist in the facility, that there's room for people to maneuver around each other, maintain a double flow of traffic along that trail by having that extra width.
And we also have, like, compared to Saginaw, we have it on both sides, but we're only going to have it on one side of Buttle. So
this will be one side, and the setbacks through downtown along this corridor are generally smaller than along Saginaw Road, both in terms of the distance between the curb and the pathway, and also between the pathway and the adjoining properties. So in some cases, well, we have existing buildings that'll be located more or less at the edge of the path, and at certain locations along the path, the curb line will be at a very minimal distance from the edge of the path also. Yeah. So that 10-foot does provide a little bit more of a comfort buffer through the corridor, both for the users of the trail as well as the users on either side.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think what the rest of the path along the in-between Lion and I always forget the
name. Oh, the bike.
Patrick, and yeah, the bike, that's not 10-foot. I don't think that's probably more like an 8-foot, maybe even 6.
That I don't know.
Yeah, I'm just looking at, you know, what 10-foot, we don't have 10-foot anywhere in the city, I don't think. And, you know, we've heard comments about the sidewalk on Saginaw Road, whether that was necessary, but it gives you a good visual about how wide that actually is, and it's pretty substantial. So I raise that because, you know, as we look at what DDA wants to spend their money on, I still think we were supposed to provide some oversight, but that would be my reaction is that 10-foot seems to be more than is necessary, but that's that question. The utilities, again, you're talking just the area up between Jerome and State again to bury those.
Correct.
Okay, and that's right. Power lines really is what we're saying. We say utilities, that's just power lines.
It'd be anything that's on the pole. So there's communication lines, there's power.
Cable.
Yeah. Okay. A lot of coordination there amongst the various utilities. Okay. And just the Buttles corridor between Jerome and
right.
State.
Okay. That's a lot of money. Then we'll get to the streetlights and stoplights. But
so the DDA approval, I know you're going to get into this. We got, what, 4 different proposals. So they were recommending
The DDA passed a resolution basically reaffirming their support for the additional elements within the DDA project boundary. And so I'll highlight that as I run through some of the scenarios we've outlined, which again are not, I'm going to run through four scenarios. These are four of many scenarios that are available to City Council, but rather than consider 100 scenarios, we narrowed it down to four we felt were likely scenarios that made sense if you were going to pursue either kind of going all in on all the additional amenities or holding back or somewhere in between some scenarios that made sense. So again, City Council could choose to include all additional elements in the project as it's currently designed and scoped. You could choose to include some of the elements in their entirety and not others. You could choose to dial back the scope of certain elements or provide no additional elements at all and just stick with the base project that's been designed by MDOT. So of those four approaches, all four include the water main work. To the mayor's earlier question, while this road is ripped up, it's the best time to do that work. So we believe it's important for it to be included in this project. And so we're including it in all four of these potential approaches. Approach number two adds the elements that the DDA has supported through their resolution in May. And so that would be the undergrounding of utilities and the non-motorized path, as well as decorative mast arms for the traffic signals in the DDA district and decorative street lighting in the DDA district. Approach number three adds to that decorative mast arms in the non-DDA portions of the project corridor. So generally speaking, those things, those intersections along Patrick and Lyon that are outside the DDA boundary, including those decorative mast arms. So options two and three, approaches two and three have a relatively minor difference in price tag. Going to approach four, this is basically all the additional elements that were outlined. And so it would be everything in part three plus decorative street lighting for the non-DDA portions of the corridor. So again, basically decorative street lighting, replacing the existing decorative street lighting along both Patrick and Lyon Roads out to Washington. Staff's recommendation is that council consider approach number three. It does include the DDA district improvements that the DDA has supported. It has a minimal contribution from the major street fund at this time, basically about $130,000 for decorative mast arms for the traffic signals along Patrick and Lyon, which would provide us with some visual continuity for this project and is also consistent with how we approach other signalized intersections around the city. This would imply that we reuse the existing decorative street lighting that is along those corridors. That will come at a cost. We're working with MDOT to get a better handle on what that cost will be. A lot of that, as I said, is going to be a matter of how much of this lighting is impacted through construction, how much can be left in place. Those costs will largely probably be variable right up through construction, but we expect they would probably be no more than about a quarter of the cost of new traffic or of new decorative street lighting through the corridor. So rather than about a $4 million cost to the city, we'd be looking at likely no more than $1 million to remove and replace those existing decorative street lights in the corridor. So we'll still have lighting, we'll still have decorative lighting. That lighting will not be the same design as the lighting that's installed on the rest of the corridor if that additional lighting is approved, but we would have lighting in place along those corridors and some visual continuity through those mast arms, again, at a pretty low cost of entry. I mentioned earlier, MDOT's going to be hosting an open house to discuss the preliminary design plans for the project, as well as the preliminary cost estimates and their plans for construction, so how they'll phase the construction. So this will be a great opportunity for anyone in the community who's interested in seeing the plans, talking with the engineers that helped to develop the plans, to get more information. City staff will also be available at the open house, and that'll be this Thursday here at the council chambers from 4 to 6.
Okay. I'm sorry to ask you to do this again before you move on to that resolution summary. That $131,000 that I'm looking at here, which is under the major street fund, okay, that pays for continuity of lighting outside of the DDA district.
That is the incremental extra cost of upgrading from a span wire traffic signal installation to a decorative mast arm traffic signal installation at the intersections outside the DDA district boundary.
So it's not full-blown decorative lighting, but it provides some consistency.
That was so, has not that would not be the street lighting. Only. That's the traffic signals. So a mast arm similar to what you'd see at Jefferson, and Sugnet, or any number of other intersections throughout the city.
Okay.
By the way, Jacob, Mr. Camaro just mentioned to me that it is 10 foot wide from the Grand Curve bike path there, so it would be consistent with that.
Okay. That's good. Okay, I didn't mean to throw off your rhythm there.
I don't know if there was a rhythm tonight, but thank you. So again, we can go back through the numbers if there's any questions. The resolution in front of you would indicate council support of approach three, which I just outlined, doesn't require a three-fifths vote. And this would enable us to provide MDOT with final direction so that they can wrap up the design process and move on to project letting sometime next year.
Can you go back to your slide that shows the recommended?
Any questions for Mr. Kay?
Okay, so where's the money coming from?
So if we back up a slide, and I won't be able to get into the details on the DDA's plans. That's part of the DDA's resolution, is for staff to put together some options for them to consider in order to fund their portion of the project. But roughly breaking down in number three, we would look at, we're going to have a major street fund contribution for our Act 51, so that's not included here. This is just for the additional elements. But we'd have approximately $131,000 based on the preliminary cost estimate for that extra decorative traffic signal mast arms in the non-DDA portions of the corridor. We'd have about $5 million in contribution from the Downtown Development Authority for the all of the additional elements within their district boundaries. And then a little over $3 million in contribution for the water fund for the water main replacement, for an all-in total for those additional elements of $8.3 million.
And the timing for the expenditures would be not this year's budget, not this coming year's budget, but the following year's budget.
It would have to be built into next year's budget.
So the budget we just approved did not have any dollars allocated for this.
No, these right now we have estimates included based on the concept. Concept plans and the cost estimates that were developed in 2022 in the capital improvement plan, but those are still in next year's line for the capital improvement plan, anticipating that we would have these preliminary numbers to build out the budget when that commitment's needed for MDOT.
Okay. And the only open question I have is, does DDA have the money for its portion? Which you said you don't know.
Well, so the answer to that is, do they have it in their coffers at the moment? No, but they can secure it through the expected income coming in through the TIF as a bond, for example. That's one option that they've asked us to look at, and we will look at others to see if there are others. So they can provide it. It's just a question of how.
Okay.
Subject, of course, to council approval on those actions. But
okay. Thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. Kay? Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, are there any comments from the public as it relates to this topic?
Okay. Hi, everyone. Elena Smith, 406 East Grove Street, Midland, Michigan. I just wanted to put in a good word for the those 8 feet wide sidewalks. Since the part on Saginaw Road has been redone with those extra wide sidewalks, I have noticed a lot of folks using them more, including myself. It was a little scary to walk my dog on the narrow sidewalks with the traffic coming so fast along Saginaw Road. But with that wider sidewalk, it feels a lot more secure, and I've seen a lot of people using it. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Any other comments? Okay, seeing none, Lacey, will you please read the resolution?
This resolution supports the inclusion of additional elements in the Business Route US 10 reconstruction project.
Okay, can we have a motion? Do we have to? Do we accept that and then state which one we want?
He's making a recommendation.
Yeah, the resolution.
Does it state the resolution? I didn't hear her say that, though.
It's shown in the preliminary presentation.
I don't have it up right now.
Jacob, does
no, it doesn't. It doesn't. It includes, well, within the DDA district only, traffic light signal, mast arms, and
so
I think it does.
Kane prepared it, so if we can bring him up, because I don't have it up.
I don't think the folks from Pizza Sam's are going to sit in my row again. So the resolution does outline the items that are included in approach number three. So at the last, or in the resolve statement, it includes a non-motorist path, underground utilities, decorative street lighting within the DDA district only, decorative traffic signal mast arms, and water main replacement.
Yeah, so that's consistent.
Yeah. So, Madam Mayor, as presented, that would approve option three or alternative three as presented. If you wish to change any of that, we would have to change the language of that last paragraph. Otherwise,
other than maybe amend to put option three in parentheses, so it's clear on what we're doing. So there's no confusion.
We can do that.
Just put a parenthetical after word replacement that says option three.
Okay. So that is $131,408 from the major street fund, right?
Correct.
That's all that's right there.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect.
Correct.
Okay. All right. So that's the motion. Any discussion on that?
I'll move to
accept the motion.
Yes.
I'll second it.
With those amendments to include
the one reference.
With the reference, correct.
Okay.
But as to discussion, I think the two things I would like looked at a little more closely, and I hate to add to cost, but since we are doing a complete street reconstruction, looking at the rest of the corridor for water main, just to ensure that it is in fact going to be able to, you know, go the next 20 years, and same thing with the sewers as well. It's like we would for any street where we tear it up. We should be making absolutely sure that everything's in basically 20-year plus age shape.
So I think we can take that, if you will, and council is comfortable with that, simply as a staff direction. I'll say 99% sure that that's already been done, but we will take a look at that and can report back to council just to make sure that that has been fully vetted.
Okay. So that is looking at item or number three with those additions of water, looking at the water main.
I don't know how we.
I don't think you need to resolve it or change it tonight.
I think
you've got a year
right
until we have to adopt the budget numbers. If we chose to do some different water mains, we could do
it. It's a direction to
right.
City manager.
That's how I'm taking it.
Yeah.
So it's basically confirming what I thought I heard Mr. Kane say, which was
we're approving the resolution.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you came back and said you wanted to assess the entire area from a water main.
As part of the discussion, I raised that.
Right.
Mm.
But that's going to be staff direction.
Right. I understand that.
Okay. Yeah. So it's not a direction to include it in the project, just for us at the staff level to make sure that we're comfortable coming back and saying, yes, we've looked at the longevity, the conditions, the locations of the water mains, and the other utilities.
If you do find something, you'll bring it back
but
to us.
But my point was, we're confirming what I thought I heard Mr. Kane say, which was they've done that, and the part where they're going to replace the water main is what they've identified to be replaced.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, sort of, I guess, is how I'll answer that. The commentary was that we've looked at that, and that's why I say I'm 99% sure that we've done it, not only in the DDA, but the entire corridor. We will take a look at that entire corridor, wherever there's going to be major road reconstruction take place, not within the overlay pavement replacement, but to make sure that there aren't any others that we should perhaps be looking at, and we'll report back on that. Worst case scenario, there was one in the DDA area that needed to be done. We would come back, report that, and we would have a discussion here at the council level on what to do about it.
Okay.
All right, any other discussion on this? We ready to vote? All in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, that passes, 5-0. All right, that takes us now down to item number 7. And that has to do with the downtown social districts. And Selena's here to tell us about that.
Okay.
We're going to wet your whistle a little bit on this last item before we send you out for the night. We're talking about the City of Midland, Downtown Midland Social Districts. There it is. Okay. Well, if for all the misery that COVID put us through, there were a few shining stars that came out of COVID, and one of them is the advent of social districts for the state of Michigan. In 2020, Michigan enacted social districts. These are defined areas within downtown districts or any tax increment financing district where alcohol beverages could be consumed out in the public area. When this legislation went into effect in 2020, at that time, the state of Michigan felt that it would run its course and set a sunset date of December 31st of 2024 for this legislation. In March of 2021, Midland City Council approved the establishment of the Downtown Midland Social District and the Downtown Midland Commons Area Maintenance and Management Plan. This is a requirement of the state for anyone having a social district. In 2022, as a result of the overwhelming success of 2 years of social district opportunities throughout the state of Michigan, Michigan eliminated that December 31st, 2024 sunset clause. However, our resolution aligned and specifically stated that we would end our social districts in December 31st of 2024. So the Downtown Development Authority felt it was important to come back to City Council to request that Council consider aligning our Downtown Midland Social District with the State of Michigan legislation, which now eliminates that December 31st, 2024 sunset date. Under state Michigan compiled law 436.1551, there is a method in place should City Council ever decide Downtown Midland no longer needs a social district. There is a clause for you to remove the social district. It starts with the publishing of a public hearing notification that you would like to embark on a revocation process. You would then hold that public hearing of revocation, and if approved, then submit the revocation notice to the state, which would remove Downtown Midland's social district. So you always have that option should you choose to move forward with tonight's recommended resolution. And I think it's really important to make a distinction here that the social districts we're talking about is the adult beverages to go. This is a year-round option available in Downtown Midland. It's not the pedestrian plaza. I know the two can become very confusing, but they are two separate entities. The pedestrian plaza is the closed streets that's operated from June through September and is approved by City Council through 2025. So we are just talking about the adult beverages to go portion of the legislation. So how have our social districts gone in Downtown Midland? When we started tracking the labels that are on all the cups, the commons cups that are sold within the social district, the first year in 2022, we had 30,000 labels produced. In 2023, that number rose to 46,000. So as people became more familiar with what they could and could not do in the social district, they became more accustomed to be able to take a beverage outside of a bar or restaurant and meander around the downtown and enjoy being outside instead of either on somebody's patio or within a restaurant or pub. I did check here in 2024, we've already produce 16,000 commons labels. So our businesses are gearing up. They're getting ready for a very active summer. Even though this is in place year-round, it's highly used during the summer months, again, when everybody just wants to be outside. We have 10 common beverage providers that have been licensed by the state of Michigan to sell into the social district. We conducted a survey of the commons beverage providers before embarking on this request to the DDA and tonight to the City Council, just to make sure this was something that they wanted to continue and they wanted to ask City Council to continue. We had 8 businesses that sell beverages into the commons respond to the survey. One business just wasn't connecting, and the other business was a brand new commons licensed common beverage provider and hasn't had the chance yet to really experience what it is to sell beverages into the commons. So of the eight that responded, all agreed that the commons should continue. They strongly agreed or agreed. They cited options like increased revenue to their business. They've had increased customer exposure as customers move from one business to the next to figure out where the lines are the shortest to get their commons beverage. And they felt that this offers a unique experience for our downtown. We also surveyed all of the downtown businesses to have them give us input on how the commons works for them. 29 businesses participated in this survey. 89% of those who responded reported positive or extremely positive interactions with the commons. Businesses that don't necessarily sell into the commons also noted they had increased sales within their businesses. They find that the commons attract people to downtown Midland and exposes their business to new customers. Of the very few concerns that were noted of businesses, many noted that they hoped to see continued responsible use of the commons so that we could continue to have it, and that businesses didn't get complacent in not checking or over-serving their customers, and that visitors to the commons area respected the boundaries and still worked within the rules of the commons. We had a conversation with the Midland Police Department, who reported that downtown Midland has very few alcohol-related instances, none that they could attribute directly to the commons, and that there were no interactions that they had with the public directly violating the rules of the commons. There are 115 commons districts, social districts, across the state of Michigan. So again, this is a popular activity across downtowns, a great deal of them north of Midland, and a handful of them south of Midland. Midland and Bay City are the only social districts listed in the Great Lakes Bay region. So again, speaking to that uniqueness of place that it makes for downtown Midland. The resolution before you tonight would align the status of the Downtown Midland Social District with MCL 436.1551, eliminating the sunset provision of December 31st, 2024, and maintaining all other provisions of the adopted Downtown Midland Commons Area Operation and Management Plan, which you adopted in 2021. And I would be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, does anyone have any questions? Ms. Harris.
So if an additional business wanted to come in and be part of this, what is the protocol? Would DDA take care of that, or does that have to still come to council?
It comes to city council, and you've seen a couple of them as we've added new businesses to the district. Aster was a new business that came in after the commons was established, and most recently you also approved Tavern on Main as a commons licensed beverage. And as you recall, last summer we expanded the district to now go from Gordon Street all the way down to Cronkrite, because Bryn Star Beer and Arcade joined our downtown businesses and wanted to be included in the commons area. So last year we expanded it by another two blocks and included Bryn Star.
And again, for new businesses or expansion, city council still has the final say on that, correct?
Absolutely.
All right, any other questions? Okay, thank you very much. Is there any comments from the public as it relates to this topic? Okay, come up, just state your name and address and your comments, please.
John Levy, 114 Vail Street, one of the partners with Three Bridges. It is vital to our business. It is, it's amazing as an, for an experience to be on Main Street, if you've ever been there. It's a gathering place. It's really good for the local hotels. It's a good reason. It's a feather in their cap to say, hey, we've got not just, it just brings all the events together, brings everybody a place to come down. And to our business is vital. Without it, I don't know if we would survive. It's one of those things where it's a make or break, because January, February, March, boy, it's a tough just to survive those months. And if we don't have in the summertime that added revenue, I think it would really change the landscape of what the downtown looks like. So appreciate it.
Great, thank you. Any other comments?
Chris Whitted, owner of Great Beginnings, 5104 North Waldo Road. I just want to address the uniqueness that Selena was talking about. There are multiple times that we have people that are from out of town that come into our establishment, and they are always so grateful that we have this opportunity. I mean, they're just blown away when we're like, or you can take one to go, and they're just like, what? You know, this is great. I wish our city had this. And so I just do know that there are places out there that don't have it and people want it. So just wanted to make that comment.
Thank you. Thank you. All right, any other comments?
Gus Voida, 1661 East Miller Road, Midland, Pizza Sam's. I just want to, I guess, follow their lead. People are overwhelmed that you can actually go out, have a drink, walk the streets, see what's in town, not just pass through, but stop. Talk to police officers. They don't have an issue, which I feel is fantastic for Midland. Gives us a nice little feather in our cap, so to speak, that we're keeping things under control. Had some customers in today, just delighted that they could come in, order something, sit outside, eat their meal, decided to come in and grab a drink and go for a walk down the streets and just see what was down there. So I would encourage you to follow our lead, and let's make it happen downtown.
All right, thanks. Thank you. Any other comments?
I'm Jamie Dawes, 612 Sylvan. I'm one of the partners at Three Bridges. I just wanted to make sure that everybody understands we take over-serving very seriously. That was one of the things we mentioned, Selena mentioned, but we take it seriously inside and extra serious outside when we do the Commons Cups. It's very important to us to make sure that doesn't happen. So, thank you.
Great, thank you. Any other comments? Okay.
Can I ask Selena a question?
Sure. Selena, I think we have another question for you.
Should I ask this beforehand? So on the responsibility of the patrons and stuff like that, do they have special training of not to serve people that
right.
everything, especially with the to-go stuff, I would take that would be an added emphasis of.
There's not specialized training for the to-go portion, but I know for any business selling alcoholic beverages, they're trained in TIPS and TAMS, which is the alcohol management requirements of the state. So I know they're all well versed in it. In addition, all of the beverage cups have a sticker on it that identifies from which business that alcoholic beverage was sold, so if any problems arose, they could trace it back through whatever cups were in the possession of any issues that were raised. But those are two things that the state has put in place, you know, the training for anyone who serves alcohol and the notification on each of the cups as to where that beverage came from.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything else? All right, Lacey, will you please read the resolution?
This resolution realigns the Downtown Midland Social District with MCL 436.1551, eliminating the December 31, 2024 sunset clause, and maintains all other provisions of the adopted Downtown Midland Commons Area Operation and Management Plan.
Can we have a motion to accept the resolution?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion on this?
You know, I remember when this proposal came to us the first time. And there was hesitation by some. Some fully supported it. And we said yes. And then it came back again. And over the years, watching it grow, I think has been amazing. I get calls from people that don't live in our community that come to visit, and they talk about how wonderful our downtown is. You know, you can have food. There's the games. You know, just the whole structure of it. And it's family-oriented, or it's date-night-oriented. And I wouldn't see why we would not approve for this to continue.
Any other comments?
I think the only negative I've heard about any of this is really just the litter aspect of it. It's making sure that people who take these to-go cups put them in the, you know, in the proper receptacle. Otherwise, it's, you know, very positively received. And so maybe to the extent the, you know, the bar and restaurant owners can help to make sure that the streets are picked up, that would be helpful, or just remind patrons to properly dispose. But otherwise, you know, general public really likes it, so.
And I do like the provision that City Council still has control over this process to include if we start seeing a lot of bad stuff happening and everything like that, we can actually do a revulsion, so.
Okay. Ready to vote? Okay, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, that passes. 5-0. All right, that takes us now down to new business. Any new business, Mr. K?
Not for me.
Anyone from council have any new business?
No.
All right, then we're adjourned. Thank you all for being here.
Channel 1, Channel 2.